Tiptoeing through the used condoms strewn on the piers off the west side highway, sunset behind the skyline of Jersey, walking towards the water with a fetus holding court in my gut, my body hijacked, my tits swollen and sore. The river has more colors at sunset than my sock drawer ever dreamed of. I could wake up screaming sometimes, but I don't. I could step off the end of this pier, but I got shit to do and an appointment on Tuesday to shed uninvited blood and tissue. I'll miss you, I say to the water, to the son, a daughter, a thought. Better of. I could fall in love with Jersey at sunset, but I leave the view to the rats and tiptoe.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of This Conversation Rocks. I'm not even counting anymore.
I think it's 21.
And this is Diane.
And it's Todd in Los Angeles.
And this is another one of those go big or go home episodes.
Well, we're hoping we're not going home.
So for those of you who have been paying attention to the Facebook page and waiting, this is the No More Wire Hangers episode.
And
we're going to talk about the big A. We're going to talk about abortion.
Outstanding.
I really want to make the point that we chose that... We agreed upon this topic before the Planned Parenthood shootings.
Yeah, back, what was it, about 4 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
All right, well, welcome back to This Conversation with Rocks, where this week's episode is about abortion.
And we were briefly interrupted by yet another one of my canine companions. All right, anyway, so we did decide to put this together well in advance of the Planned Parenthood shooting, so it just seems more pertinent now.
Absolutely. And did you see the court appearance from that guy?
I did. Yeah, I thought we could talk about that a little bit more when we talk about just the whole role of Planned Parenthood in general.
All right. Absolutely.
So, I don't know where you want to start. I kind of just looked up some things about abortion, about the procedure, about life before and after Roe versus Wade.
My first question, and I don't know if you know the answer, and of course we can edit this out if it goes badly, but was there, prior to Roe v. Wade, was abortion always illegal in the United States?
So I am glad you asked that, and I kind of have an answer. So it sounds like it was banned except in the case of the mother's life being threatened. And even then, it sounds like it was rare and difficult to access. And of course, a lot of women got illegal abortions instead of safe and legal abortion. I want to say that even part of the reason that Roe versus Wade went to trial is that even in the places where an abortion was legal and safe, were not accessible just because of distance. So the woman on whose behalf Roe versus Wade was filed actually could not afford to travel to have a safe and legal abortion. So that was part of the reason her case went to trial. So it was sort of available, but not really.
Okay. And to be clear, it was always available to people with money.
Yeah. You know, available to families who could afford it and then who could engage in the extensive cover-up. You know, most families really did engage in a pretty extensive cover-up.
Yeah, because... of this stigma and the illegality of it, yeah.
Which is so super interesting, right? Because I was doing a lot of reading, and even today, one of the most common medical procedures in the United States is an abortion.
Yeah, and it's not who everybody thinks that it is, right?
Right. I mean, the numbers are staggering. First of all, like 40% of women in the U.S. will elect to have a termination at some point in their life. And these numbers come from the Guttmacher Institute, so they're not just numbers that I'm making up.
So that's 4 out of 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Typically, they're young, white, unmarried, poor, or, and this is really interesting, over the age of 40, because you'll get women who think that they're menopausal and who think that their risk of pregnancy is low to non-existent, and then they get surprised by a pregnancy that they decide not to carry to term for whatever reason.
Right.
So I've got a couple more things about abortion before it was legal.
Sure.
So it looks like the estimates vary pretty widely. There were estimates that anywhere from 200,000 to 1.2 million abortions were performed illegally annually before Roe versus Wade. And just in 1965 alone, there were 256 deaths documented due to illegal abortion. In fact, 17% of all deaths in 1965 that were attributed to pregnancy and childbirth were actually because of complications from illegal abortions.
Okay.
So that's huge. You know,
that's huge.
That's basically two out of every 10 women who were recorded as complications in pregnancy, their deaths were recorded as pregnancy complications, actually died because of illegal abortion.
Which is awful.
Yeah, and which is what some people want to push us back to.
And that's the piece that I just can't possibly understand is, you know, why are we even... You know, I was commenting to you before we started, right, that, like, this was, like, something we passionately argued about when I was in high school and
right.
stuff, right? And even then, Roe v. Wade was almost 20 years old.
Right.
You know, and here it is, a long damn time since high school, 30 years since high school, and we're still, as a country, arguing this, even though, if I am correct, right, the majority of Americans actually have no problem with abortion.
I think it's a pretty... I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think it's a pretty divided majority. I think it's just like our voting. You know, there's like 49% and 51%. It may be a little better than that. It sounds like you're looking it up. Thank you.
I am absolutely looking it up.
While you're looking it up, I really have to take women to task because I think women overall... And I'm specifically going to be pointing fingers at the post-feminist generation. They've gotten lazy. You know, they've taken advantage of the rights that were won for us by the generation prior to us. And we just don't fight as hard, you know, and we're not as loud and we're complacent. And that is part of the reason that we're looking at a push back toward pre-Roe versus Wade.
Okay, and... Here we go with the numbers, which aren't actually as good as I would have hoped.
Yeah.
50% pro-choice, 44% pro-life. 54% of women are pro-choice, 46% of men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the question
That's not as good as it has been in the past.
Well, and I mean, I think... Oh my God, you know, there's just so much rhetoric, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit too, but rhetoric matters, you know, and all of this really impassioned and angry conversation right now matters. The bullshit videotapes that were alleged to be from Planned Parenthood, those matter because you can't take shit like that back.
Right.
You know, you can't take your rhetoric back. You can't take... falsely produced or extremely misleading things back, they are out in the public mind. And people are simple enough that they look at things in terms of black and white and they don't think about it. They don't question it.
Right. And there's an awful lot of people who believe it's not an issue that they need to worry about or
right.
need to consider.
Right.
And that's a problem because it all goes back to, in my opinion, right, it all starts with how you view women in this society.
I completely agree. I mean, it's not just about the right whether or not to terminate a pregnancy. It's about the right to bodily autonomy, for a woman to make decisions about her own body without interference from anyone else, including her partner, the state, the feds.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely. And I have no understanding of why anybody would think that it's a good idea to allow the government to dictate that.
Well, and help me with the equivalency. I mean, I really don't know if there's any kind of equivalency for men in terms of something that the state tells them that they absolutely should not do. I mean, can...
Medically, but my body, I'm not aware of anything.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly can't think of anything that men experience that is even remotely equivalent to this.
No, I mean, that is unique to men. No.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to...
There are rules governing donor transplants and stuff, but that applies equally to everybody.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there are medical things that do apply across sexes, and that's fine. This is something where we have singled out a category, and then we're trying to restrict that category, which, you know, by everything else, right, is illegal.
Right.
You know, with the exception of abortion, because, because, oh my God, it's such a moral issue.
Well, and I'm not trying to be hateful toward men, but I just think truly, honestly, that all of those jokes and memes that say, you know, if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament, it's true.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, hello? Are you there?
Sorry. No, because the thing is that men have enjoyed privilege, you know?
There are a lot of people who would deny that. I mean, they're the same people who deny the whole idea of white privilege, which I probably shouldn't even bring that up, but I'm just astonished. Just astonished that people can be in denial about things like that. So... just to help us move on a little bit, you want to talk a little bit about Roe versus Wade?
Well, yeah. So a couple of things. I mean, first of all, 5 states actually had legalized abortion 3 years before Roe v. Wade.
Which was the argument made to Jane Roe. I think her name was Norma McCorvey, actually. You know, you can't get an abortion in Texas, but you can travel and you can get an abortion somewhere where it's legal. But she was so poor that she couldn't afford the travel and the procedure outside of the state of Texas.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Texas is a big damn state.
Right.
And I can't imagine we're talking about Arkansas or right. Oklahoma.
I suspect we're probably talking about it. New York or California. But
right. Yeah. So there was an argument that made little sense.
Yeah. And I do think it's important. I mean, I want to be open and honest about this, that Norma McCorvey has since spoken out against having her abortion and has since become a spokesperson for the Right to Life movement. I disagree with her. I'm sorry that she has so many regrets, but, you know, I'm grateful for the ruling. I'm grateful that the case was brought to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and the court actually had... you know, the problem with the Supreme Court is that almost any ruling they make, you know, some people are going to agree and some people are going to disagree. I happen to agree with this ruling, so I'm very happy about it.
Right. Happen to disagree with Hobby Lobby? Not happy there.
Not happy at all. Which is interesting because, you know, in its own way, it does tie back to this because Hobby Lobby is about denying access to birth control, which theoretically would decrease the rate of pregnancy, which would decrease the need for abortions.
You would think. That seems to be logical. That seems to be borne out in the research, actually.
I was going to say, so yeah, I mean, I'm sure that we've got some statistics that show that access to birth control has a positive correlation to the decline in abortion.
I am pretty sure that I do. Now, if I could find that in my millions and millions of notes. Ah, so here we go. So overall, from 2008 to 2011, and I want you to think about who was in office and who controlled the Congress, there was a 13% decline in abortion.
From 8 to 11?
From 2008 to 2011.
Okay. Yeah, that would be...
The Democrats.
But Republicans in the Congress, so...
Well, no, but we had a Democratic Congress for a while, so...
Okay.
You know, I mean, the truth is that there is...
Well, let's go with what... Okay, during that 3 years, what happened? I mean, we had this decline. what caused the decline? What did we do? What did we, the Democrats, do right?
The Affordable Care Act leaps to mind. Which was supposed to increase women's access to birth control, which is what the Hobby Lobby decision ultimately
chopped this up and
edited. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So the problem with that, with the Affordable Care Act, is it actually doesn't get signed into law until March of 2010.
So it could be responsible for some of the decline, but not all. So what else did we do right?
That's a good question. I love the internet.
Every argument is solved by Google. Well, not solved, but at least bolstered.
So
here's what Roe did while you're looking. So in Roe versus Wade, the decision was made that it was completely unconstitutional for outlawing or regulation of any aspect of abortion during the first trimester. So I'm already questioning that because I don't see that today.
Okay.
Second trimester, the court ruled that abortion regulations could be enacted that were reasonably related to maternal health. Now, obviously, the language reasonably related to maternal health is pretty open to interpretation. And then third trimester, the court ruled that regulations could be made to protect maternal health and also to protect the life of the fetus. So third trimester abortions, extremely rare anyway, but, you know, it was still, at the time of Roe versus Wade and still today, pretty much agreed upon that those were taboo. Very, very rare for those to be done.
Right.
Interestingly enough, it was a 7-2 court decision, so it was pretty overwhelmingly in favor of women. And basically, the idea was that regulating abortion violates a woman's zone of privacy, and they cited the 1st, 4th, 9th, and 14th Amendments. And I'm going to be honest with you and tell you I did not look up each of those constitutional amendments. But, you know, they basically have to do with autonomy, with bodily autonomy and privacy.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to flip us back to what we were just saying about the decline, right?
Okay, go for it.
So here's the problem. Actually, what's happened since 2010 is it's harder to get an abortion. States have enacted a total of 231 restrictions on abortion since the midterm 2010 elections.
Jesus, I feel so naive.
When the Republicans picked up a record 680 seats in state legislatures. Fucking Tea Party moron motherfuckers.
So it would be interesting to see if we have a correlation in unintended pregnancies being carried to term.
Yeah,
I would suspect that we would, but...
Right. Limitations on insurance coverage, access for minors, the use of medication to induce abortion, and many more. Mandatory counseling and waiting periods. 26 states require women to wait between 1 and 3 days to get abortion after receiving counseling. And in no other fucking medical procedure that anybody can think of do you have to wait 1 to 3 days after getting counseling. You know, it's not like your oncologist says, okay, hey, look, you know, so you got cancer.
I'm going to tell you about all the risks of the procedure. I'm not going to talk to you about the benefits, but I'm going to tell you about the risks.
Risks. I'm going to show you some pictures of some people who survived cancer, I guess.
And also some really horrible complications from cancer.
Sure. Right. And then I'm going to make you think 1 to 3 days before we get started.
Right. Not only that, but I, you know, not to be too pointed, but here we go. You can walk into Walmart, because I've done this, buy a gun. Done it with a shotgun, done it with a hunting rifle, minimum background check, walk out same day. The process takes about hour to 2 hours if they're really busy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the point that women's bodies are more heavily regulated than firearms in this country? Yeah.
That's a breed of American insanity. Yeah, so 23 clinics in Texas have closed since 2012.
Which is what Wendy Davis famously filibustered against.
Right. Now there are 18. So this is just in Texas we're talking about now, but there are only 18 clinics across the 267,000 square mile state.
So we try to talk about the meta point, right? So the meta point to this is we're right back to where Jane Roe was in 1973.
Not entirely.
But pretty damn close.
Yeah.
Because a lot of women can't afford to travel out of their neighborhoods.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But here's the other thing that is actually a positive, but has nothing to do with abortion, right? The need for abortions appears to have declined greatly. In 2010, teen pregnancy reached its lowest point in 30 years. And between 2002 and 2011, the rate of abortions among girls aged 15 to 19 decreased by 34%. So, you know, I mean, there's obviously some correlation there, too.
But and again, what's the rate of pregnancies being carried to term? That would be my question.
Exactly.
And I don't know that we have that information readily available.
Yeah. Since certain portions of the Affordable Care Act took effect in 12, birth control has become free for many American women. Roughly 62% of women of childbearing age used some sort of contraception in 2013. This is according to the CDC. Yet, according to a report by a company that tracks the pharmaceutical industry, women aren't necessarily using more birth control. In other words, the number of prescriptions for the pill has only increased slightly in the past half decade, rising from 93 to 95 million.
That makes me wonder, are they looking at other methods? Because there's so many other methods available now.
Right, absolutely. You know, and this is one of the problems that we're going to have with stats, though, regarding abortion and
birth control.
Birth control and everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, here's the thing, is that the same people who are opposed to, by and large, the same people who are opposed to abortion are also the ones who are out there trying to make it hard to get access to birth control.
Oh, absolutely. Therefore, creating a complete catch-22.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
And then there's also some indications, though, that women are less comfortable getting abortions, undoubtedly, because of all the crap.
Yeah, gee. Getting at minimum hassled when you walk into a clinic and having to have an escort into the clinic, all the way up to potentially being killed.
Right. Apparently, the support for abortion topped out with our generation.
Interesting.
Our younger peers haven't had the same thoughts about abortion.
Well, and this is why I kind of felt like I had to call out the post-feminist generation of women, because lazy, lazy, lazy. You know, not working to keep those advances in place that were hard-earned for us.
Absolutely. And again, it is one of those things about the American electorate that just drives me nuts, and that is that we can convince people, in this case women, to vote against their own self-interest.
Right.
Nobody's saying that you have to get an abortion. Nobody's making anybody get an abortion, but it should be legal. You should have access to it.
Because the alternative is, if you get into a situation where you need one, potentially dying if you seek one.
Right.
Or having a child that you never wanted to have.
Which is interesting, because that leads me to one of my favorite arguments. And that is the correlation between the legality of abortion and the decrease of crime.
Go for it. I mean, I'm interested to hear it.
Yeah, so it is a hypothesis put together by Donahue and Levitt that legalized abortions in the 70s explains a substantial part of the crime decline in the 90s. And you can get into all, I'm not going to get into all the stats, but I'm going to get into some of the statements here. Five states that legalized abortion 3 years before Roe v. Wade. In those five states, crime started falling 3 years earlier than in the rest of the states.
Interesting.
After abortion was legalized, the availability of abortions differed dramatically across states. North Dakota and Deep South, is virtually impossible to get abortion even after Roe v. Wade. If one compares states that had high abortion rates in the mid-70s to states that had low abortion rates in the mid-70s, you see the following patterns with crime from the period 73 to 88. The two sets of states, higher abortion and low abortion, have nearly identical crime patterns. This is the period before the generations exposed to legalized abortion are old enough to do much crime. So this is exactly what the theory predicts, but from the period of 85 to 97, when post-Roe is reaching peak crime rates...
Right, when women were really...
High abortion states see a decline of crime of 30% relative to low abortion states.
Interesting.
All of the decline in crime from 85 to 97 experienced by high abortion states relative to low abortion states is concentrated among age groups born after Roe v. Wade. So, people born before legal abortion legalization, there's absolutely no difference in the crime patterns.
So I'm assuming that their hypothesis is a couple of things. One, that you don't have individuals and families stressed by unintended pregnancy and large families that they can't take care of. And I'm assuming that the other is that you don't have a generation of people who are poorly parented because of those stressors.
Yeah. Basically, you have less unwanted children, therefore mm-hmm. you have less people who are more likely to be committing crime.
Because of poor parenting and because of neglect and...
Right.
Interesting. Well, I want to talk a little bit more, too, about the women who are getting abortions, and this is current information from the Guttmacher Institute also. So 9 out of 10 abortions occur in the first trimester. Women are 58% in their 20s. So the bulk of abortions are done for women in their 20s. But again, women over 40 are another big group. 61% have one or more children. So these are people who've decided to be childbearing and who've decided to keep a pregnancy and have just realized that for whatever reason, they cannot bring another child into their family. 55% are unmarried and not cohabitating, which argues for unanticipated pregnancy. Yeah. 69% are economically disadvantaged. So this goes to the whole idea of the vanishing middle class and of wealth inequality, which that's hugely related to people's ability to have families.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, right? Because it makes little to no sense to bring children into the world if you can't afford to raise
them. Right, exactly.
Which, by the way, right, is in fact actually been the trend in the Western nations for a long time, right? Overall birth rates have been falling in the Western nations.
Well, and which, by the way, I just have to say that the person who was calling for cuts to Medicaid, which is one of the programs that helps people who are economically disadvantaged afford health care, which helps children who have parents who can't afford insurance get health care. One of the people very recently calling for cuts to that program was Paul Ryan, the leader of the GOP in the House.
Yeah, the Speaker of the House.
Just want to say. So this number was also stunning, and I just want to get this out there, too. So 73% of women who have abortion report a religious affiliation. So the argument that, you know, it's just those of us who are atheist heathens getting abortions is totally inaccurate.
Right, because the bottom line is, who's getting abortions? Everybody.
7 out of 10 women who are getting abortions have religious affiliation, which typically means affiliation with a Christian church when you're talking about the U.S.
Typically. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's not enough of us atheist heathens to actually account for the abortion rate at all, right?
Yeah, really. When you're talking 4 out of 10, you're right. There's really not enough of us.
Yeah, but this is the thing, is that despite, you know, this is the thing that's interesting to me, is that despite the attacks, you know, through religion or whatever, the number's still, you know, it's not 56%, which is where it was a few years ago. It's now back around 50, but that's where it's been historically in this country forever. It's about half the people are opposed to abortions. Interestingly enough, though, that even according to the Gallup, our friends over at Gallup, right, 4% of the people who are pro-life still think that abortion should be legal under any circumstance, and 4% of the people who are pro-choice think it should be illegal in all circumstances. So I don't know what to do with that stat other than that was like, well, that's weird. But, you know, the thing is, Right, no surprise, right? 50% of the people who think that, who consider themselves pro-choice, think it should be legal under any circumstances. 37% of pro-lifers think that it should be illegal in all circumstances, and 51% of the pro-lifers think that it should be legal only in a few circumstances. So, I mean, you know, this is the problem with the abortion issue in and of itself, is that we have defined this thing so black and white. Either you are for or against.
Right.
There's very little room in the middle. And maybe it's because there is, shouldn't be any room in the middle.
Well, when you brought up the idea of just the black and white stats, like who's pro and who's con, initially, one of the questions that came to mind for me is, I wonder how much of that changes depending on what procedure you're talking about, depending on what trimester you're talking about. I mean, I think there's a lot, there are a lot of questions, and there's a lot of variability depending on the circumstances.
Yeah.
I have to tell you a story. I got to tell you the truth. I probably 3 years ago took care of a patient who hid her pregnancy until very late in the pregnancy. We actually thought that she was probably around 24 weeks. It turned out by ultrasound that she was much later than that. and she came in seeking an abortion. And there are very few clinics that will do them over 20 weeks. There are no clinics in Alaska, to the best of my knowledge, that will do them in 24 weeks or later than 20 weeks. So I started trying to look up resources for her to go out of state. But I have to tell you, when I put my hands on her belly and felt that baby moving, and it felt like a baby, it wasn't a fetus, it felt like a baby, I've got to tell you, I was like, you're stuck, man. You know, and I am rabidly pro-choice, but there is a point at which the decision is taken out of our hands.
Yeah, but it's
not black and white.
But it's a legal decision. It's not a...
Well, and so
the thing is that we have put legal concepts to when is a pregnancy a pregnancy,
right? And when is it not a fetus, and when is it a baby? And we don't know.
And you know, because you were telling me this a couple weeks ago, right? That if you're pregnant and you come into the ER, right, and you're less than 20, you stay less than 20 weeks, you're basically going to stay in the ER.
Less than 20 weeks, you're in the ER. More than 20 weeks, you get sent to OB.
Yeah.
And this goes right to the question of viability, which we were talking about. So when is a pregnancy viable? When can that fetus, baby, whatever term you want to use, survive outside of the womb? We don't know. So the research shows right now that there are no reliable or acceptable tests before the gestational age of 28 weeks. So we've had infants who have been born at 20 weeks and who, with intensive intervention, have survived.
And
those are very rare.
Just for the idiots in the audience like myself. 9 months, but what is the actual week count?
So the actual week is somewhere between 38 to 40 weeks. If a woman gives birth at a 38-week gestational age, it's considered to be a full-term pregnancy. The average pregnancy is about 40 weeks.
So really, actually, while it's always 9 months, the truth of the matter is it's actually 9.5 to 10.
Right.
Although, I guess it accounts for some of the 5 week months in there or whatever. But
there you go. Yeah, it makes more sense to me to think of it in terms of weeks, even though we say 9 months. But, I mean, the bottom line is that, so we've got this kind of artificial dividing line between before 20 weeks and after 20 weeks. But
right.
The truth is, we don't have any good tests or good verifications of viability of a pregnancy until after 28 weeks. So, I mean, the medical profession itself isn't black and white. We don't really know.
No, and it's because, you know, we've allowed our politics, though, to
overshadow our medical ethics.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, this is not something that I begrudge a family that wants to try to keep a child alive, but the other thing that I will say is that a child that's born at 20 weeks, a child that's born before, gosh, probably 32 weeks. And I'm not a neonatal intensive care provider, so people have to bear with me. But a child that's born at 20 weeks requires intensive, expensive, arduous monitoring, support, treatment. And many of these kids are affected for life. I mean, there are kids who have long-term respiratory problems, long-term vision problems, long-term developmental problems that require lifelong support as a result of being born at such an early gestational age. So it's not a simple thing. And defining viability and defining when life begins, it's not a simple thing. We don't know how to do that.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I think that's definitely one of the things that makes abortion so complicated. But I just have to go back to the whole idea that this is the only procedure where women and men are treated differently, and it's a procedure where women are told that they don't have the right to make decisions about their own bodies.
I agree. So what's interesting to me, also when you start looking at the statistics, though, right? Here's some stats. Number of terminated pregnancies fell nearly 30% in Hawaii from 10 to 14. Representing the greatest abortion decline in the nation. That decline happened as the state's historically high teen pregnancy rate, Hawaii was 10th in the nation, has been falling. And changes to Hawaii's sex education policies have played a role in doing this.
Right. Well, look at Colorado. I mean, look at that big experiment. I call it an experiment. It wasn't really. In Colorado very recently, where birth control was covered for teens, and birth control was easily accessible for teens. Abortion rate and unintended pregnancy rate and STD infections all dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just proof positive that being honest and providing young people with tools, providing anyone with tools to prevent pregnancy and prevent disease is the best way to go.
Right, and conversely, right? Everything seems to point towards this abstinence-only education nonsense.
And it doesn't work.
As increasing the teenage pregnancy.
Right, absolutely. Because you are not going to overcome biological urge with abstinence-only education. I'm sorry.
You know, it's one of those things where, again, I think it's kind of odd because it's like, if you really do want to take care of, if your goal is to eliminate abortion, right? Which I think is, if you were to ask,
share that goal.
Yeah, I mean,
or at least dramatically reduce. Right.
You know, I mean, I think if you ask the pro-lifers what they're trying to do, it would be to eliminate abortion. Sure. And so now let's talk about how we can do it. Well, we can eliminate abortion through legal means. Okay, that's crap. Because that is everything we've been talking about and isn't going to happen, by the way. You know, the public is not anti-abortion. You know, it's not vocal right at the moment, but it's certainly more pro-choice than it is, pro-life.
Right.
So why can't we have logical, reasonable conversations about things that we could agree with about, which is ways to decrease unwanted pregnancies? But then it gets weird, right? Because as soon as you start talking about, well, you know, sex education decreases unwanted pregnancy, the next thing you know, we're teaching abstinence only, which is in fact actually raising the rate of teen pregnancy and, yeah, oh my God, really raising the rate of teen sexually transmitted disease.
Well, okay. You know, and I think that this kind of goes to people like Rick Santorum, and it's been a while, so we're going to give people an opportunity to Google his name. 3, 2, 1. You know, people who are extremely conservative, who are on his end of the political spectrum, seem to think that offering good sex education means that you get incredibly graphic. And the truth is, you don't. It's not like you're showing pornos in school, in school classrooms.
Dear you know? God, we all wish that was going on.
But the thing is you can be honest and you can give good information, and you can be somewhat clinical without being gross or graphic or being age inappropriate.
Right.
You know, I mean, sometimes kids just want really simple answers. They don't need the whole picture. They just need simple answers to the questions that come up for them at the time.
Right.
I loved
doing the thing that just irritates the hell out of me about a lot of the nonsense, as far as I'm concerned, about sex education and stuff from the right, you know, that like it encourages sex or anything. It's like, really? Was it all that hard to figure out that tab A goes in slot B? I mean, did you really have any confusion as to what your parts were for or how they worked?
And, you know, but here is the other thing. So tab A and slot B are pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah.
But slot B also has other complicated things surrounding it that women don't know about and that men don't know about.
And we should be talking about that stuff.
Right.
But, this thought that somehow teaching kids about sex is going to encourage them to have it, that's insane.
The truth is I loved teaching sex education when I was a school nurse, and I still have young people who say, dude, you scarred me for life. You know, and it's not that I wanted to scar anybody for life, but I wanted to be really honest with people about risk and prevention and those kinds of things, and I felt like I had a chance to do that.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and this kind of goes to my experience a little bit as an ER nurse, but also now as a nurse practitioner, I am appalled by the number of women who still don't have the most basic understanding of their anatomy. I mean, women don't know what the clitoris is. They don't know that they pee from a different hole than they have sex through. They don't know the difference from a vagina, between a vagina and urethra. And so often I will get women in the clinic who are like, you know, it kind of itches down there. And I'm like, be more specific. Well, you know, down there. Okay, that's really specific. Thanks. That helps me a lot.
Right. Right, which is this whole thing, this whole cultural thing that we have.
About not teaching and not talking.
Right, and that, you know, somehow our women are sluts if they actually have sex.
Right, or God forbid if they get pleasure from sex.
Yeah, well, we won't even talk about that. Women, but yeah, I mean, this is the whole thing. And I mean, you know, and guys, hey, listen, dudes, you know, it's incumbent on you. Also, to be educated.
Right, to know that, that there's a lot more than just slot B.
This is not to
steal your point, but this is very true. You know, a lot of stuff that I run into in clinic as well is that women are not having pleasure because men are not educated about women's bodies. This is a very hetero conversation, and I apologize to anybody from the LGBT community who's listening, but you know, we're just not educated, and so men don't know how to turn women on because they don't know what all the parts and pieces are for.
Right, and how to work with all the parts and pieces, and you know, and if you're getting your education from porn,
right.
You're really not getting an education.
Oh, and I'm so glad you brought that up. And we're so way off track already. We've got so much more to talk about. But so another thing that I run into is that women talk about their partners getting expectations and education from pornography, and they feel like they have to measure up to porn stars. And, you know, the point that I would make is, first of all, as you just said, totally unrealistic. None of us can measure up to that. I mean, granted, if I was being paid to do nothing but have sex all day long, I would probably work out more and spend more time with a plastic surgeon.
I could definitely measure up. Yes, if that was my job definition.
If it was the job definition, exactly. But for most of us, that's just not the truth. And the other thing is that, you know, I see women making choices, including things as simple as pubic hair grooming, that are not choices that they're making for themselves. They're making them because they think that their partner has those expectations. And so one of the things that I really want to encourage people to talk about is, what are your expectations? Are they realistic? And also, it's not just women who suffer body image issues and who suffer damage to their self-esteem from watching porn or being held up to those expectations. Men are subject to unrealistic expectations as well.
Absolutely.
You know, we have to have compassion for both genders, all genders that are looking to pornography as their education.
And should we let the big secret out of the bag?
Go for it.
Okay. Again, strictly this is a hetero conversation, but you know, guys will talk shit among their friends and talk about how they want this or that, but they'll take anything that gets put in front of them.
Who was it who said all cats are gray? All cats are gray in the dark.
Yeah.
Exactly. I always just say it and excuse me for being crass, but I always say it has to be warm, wet, and willing.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly. But the thing is that, you know, pubic hair and all that stuff, right? Guys will talk all this shit about all of this stuff. But the absolute bottom line is they will take anything that they can get.
Right.
There's so few guys that have their choice of everything that they can't actually be that discriminating.
Right. So since we're strayed really far from abortion and on to the topic of sex, and we are going to go back to the topic of abortion, I do want to share a couple of resources with anybody who might be listening. So people who know me have heard this spiel, but there's an awesome author named Joan Price. She's very active on Facebook. She's got a couple of books out. She calls herself a senior sex advocate, but she's actually targeting the 50 and older crowd. And she's phenomenal. I just can't recommend her work enough to people who are still struggling with self-esteem and sexuality. And then Dan Savage has a great podcast called The Savage Love Podcast. Very frank, very open discussion of all kinds of sexuality, not just heteronormative sexuality. And then Tristan Taormino, Taormino. She has a podcast called Sex Out Loud that's really great too. So there are some really good resources out there for people. And I encourage people to ask questions on the Facebook page or to send us an email. I'd be happy to take some of those questions offline if people don't want to talk about it. So what's our email again? Is it thisconversationrocks@gmail.com?
Yeah, and it's been quite lonely for quite a while.
So the other thing I would say, since we're on that topic, oh my gosh, we're going really down the rabbit hole. Gosh, if you want to leave us an iTunes review, we'd love it. So
yeah,
if you're not totally pissed off that we're talking about abortion, it'd be great to have you leave an iTunes review.
But I don't think we've gone down the rabbit hole because...
It's all related.
First and foremost, the only cause of abortion is sex.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, there is that.
All right.
So,
you know, the thing is that, again... It all ties together in the politics of this stuff. Sometimes it's horrid and sometimes quite scary, but you know, Donald Trump yesterday said that Chief Justice Roberts was a pussy or something along those lines.
I know.
Right. And Roberts, and he should never have been on the court and everything. And Roberts is actually a conservative.
Right.
You know, Roberts is one of the guys that scares me about, you know, can Roe v. Wade be overturned?
Right. But Donald Trump is holding up people like Scalia and Thomas as being his heroes, who are super scary.
Super scary, and in the case of Thomas, complete fucking numbnuts.
Well,
I'm sorry, that's an opinion. That is not meant to be a factual statement. That is a complete opinion.
How's this for a factual statement? Obviously disrespects women.
Clearly.
So I wanted to talk before we went into our Act 2, which is more about Planned Parenthood. I wanted to talk a little bit about the different kinds of abortion that are available.
Okay.
Unless there's somewhere else you want to go before we head there.
No, let's do the medical portion of the podcast.
Okay. So there's two types of abortion. There's a medical abortion where the woman is given medication to induce termination of pregnancy. And then there's the surgical abortion, where a procedure is actually done to evacuate the contents of the uterus. Medical abortions, those are usually done in the first trimester. It's using medications that essentially open up the cervix, cause the cervix to ripen and soften and open up and evacuate the contents of the uterus. RU486 is a medical abortion. So those have about 75 to 95% success rate. 2 to 4% end up going to surgical abortion because the abortion is not induced by medication. And 5 to 10% of the medical abortions actually are considered incomplete because there's some retained contents from the pregnancy, and those women have to go to surgery to basically stop bleeding and reduce risk of infection. So, super important that women have access to do this safely. I mean, even with just medications, there are risks. So typically, before 9 weeks, you're going to see medication or surgery. 9 to 14 weeks, you're going to see a dilation and curettage, which is where they kind of scrape out and suction out the contents of the uterus. And after 14 weeks, you're going to see dilation and extraction. So it's a more aggressive procedure to remove the pregnancy from the uterus. And at 20 weeks, they actually do induction of labor, or they will cut the uterus open and extract the pregnancy that way. So obviously, the earlier a woman can have access, the safer she is.
Absolutely. And again, it's worth pointing out that the ability to get an elective abortion in this country is generally prohibited over 26 weeks.
And again, I want to tell you that when I was researching for that, the patient that I mentioned earlier, I had difficulty finding anyone that would do abortion up to 24 weeks or past 24 weeks.
Right, which is, again, indicative of the restrictions and all the other nonsense that's been going on in the state legislatures and everything for quite a while.
You know, and just before we go to Planned Parenthood and while we're on the topic of nonsense, forcing women to look at pictures of ultrasounds, forcing women to have transvaginal ultrasounds, which in my opinion, that's a rape. Exactly.
I want to know the number of guys who are out there who are more than willing to have something shoved, something the size of that wand shoved up their asshole.
Yeah, to get a medical procedure.
Prior to getting a medical procedure, yeah. Which has nothing to do with the ultrasound whatsoever.
And I just want to say, you know, you may change someone's mind, someone who's wavering and struggling anyway, but boy, the emotional torment and the cost to the woman who is already making a difficult decision, forcing her to look at an ultrasound or forcing her to have a transvaginal ultrasound, that's unconscionable. That's criminal.
And from all the stats, potentially as somebody who is already an adult, already raised a family and is making a real informed decision.
And who has religious beliefs that she's struggling with anyway.
Or you're talking about people that you have denied access to birth control. You haven't taught them anything about how sex actually works, or right. You know, better how to prevent it.
Yeah, because remember, we're talking about women over 40 or women in their 20s.
Yeah, you know, it's this really sick, sick thing, in my opinion.
Okay, I'm going to rant a little bit again, and this is based on clinical experience. But I have situations where, you know, I'll ask women about birth control, and they'll say, "Oh, well, you know, sometimes." Sometimes my partner just decides he wants to do it anyway without a condom.
No, under no circumstances should that be where your head is at.
Well, you know, and these are, I hate to say it, and I hate to be hard on women, but these are women who are allowing themselves to be second-class citizens, who are allowing themselves to be silent so they can maintain a relationship that's not serving them anyway.
Yeah. Well, and just the general belief that
if you defer to your partner.
Well, or if you don't do certain things for your partner, your partner's going to move on.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, Dan,
if your partner is going to move on over condoms, you probably should let them.
Yeah. Dan Savage has a famous phrase, DTMFA, ditch the motherfucker already. Dump the motherfucker already. And you know, every now and then I'm really tempted to pull that out in the clinical setting. Because when I have a woman tell me that her use of contraception is intermittent because her partner sometimes insists that they don't, even though neither one of them wants a pregnancy, that really disturbs me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, so...
And there's this other thing too, right? And this goes across everybody. You are responsible. You personally are responsible for not getting pregnant or not getting your partner pregnant and for not passing on or catching STDs. You, not them, you are responsible for
right.
that. So that is up to you to wear a condom or you to make sure that he's wearing a condom. You know, she's on the pill, still wear a condom.
Here's the other thing.
Because these things aren't perfect anyway.
Yes, that's exactly where I wanted to go. So sometimes people experience birth control failure, and even though they are doing their best to prevent a pregnancy or prevent disease, they end up with a problem anyway. You know, sometimes some diseases that we carry as humans, all they require is skin-to-skin contact, and condoms don't cover all skin. So, you know, I mean, there are some situations where things are unavoidable, but absolutely it's our responsibility as individuals to do the best we can to prevent pregnancy and prevent transmission of disease. Prevent pregnancy if that's what we're looking for. I should add that. I mean, I have no problem with people who want a pregnancy and who want a child in their lives. I just don't want someone to be forced into the situation of having a child if they don't want to have a child.
Oh, absolutely.
Or if they're not ready for a child.
Absolutely. It just makes no sense. You, the individual, are responsible. If you are not, if your partner is not acting responsibly, you are responsible for ditching the motherfucker already.
Yeah. DTMFA, man. Sorry, Dan. Thank you. We appreciate you letting us steal that.
I think he would agree with what we're saying.
Oh, right? Yeah. I think so, too.
So far, we have covered medical procedures related to abortion. We have covered the legalities
of
being able to get abortions. We've talked about sex education. Dear God, what else do we have?
Well, so I think we really need to talk about Planned Parenthood, especially in light of the shooting in Colorado Springs. So Act Two is really Planned Parenthood's role in not just abortion, but also prevention and education.
I completely agree. And here's the thing with Planned Parenthood, right? Is that first and foremost, they are not in the abortion business. They do provide that as part of their family planning services, but that's not what they do.
So do you have the stat? Because I have the stats.
It's like less than 3%, isn't it?
So abortion services are 3%. What we're really looking at, Planned Parenthood. So they offer primary care. They help prevent unintended pregnancies with contraception. They reduce sexually transmitted infections with testing and treatment. And they screen for cancer.
Provide education.
They provide comprehensive sex education to 1.5 million people a year. 1.5 million people a year who actually know how slot A and slot B work and a little bit more. Or tab A and slot B.
Tab A, slot B.
So a couple of other numbers that I just want to share. So annually, Planned Parenthood does 4,000 pap smears, which screen for cervical cancer. They do 500,000, that's 500,000 breast exams, which screen for breast cancer. They do 4.5 million tests and treatments for sexually transmitted infections annually. That's including 700,000 HIV tests. So abortion services are 3% of what they do.
Right.
1 in 5 women in the United States has accessed Planned Parenthood services in her lifetime.
Man.
And I'm sending
that's
men.
Only 20%.
Yeah, but still, that's 20% of women are served by Planned Parenthood.
Yep.
When you flip that around, that's a big number.
No, I completely agree. It's just not big enough, in my opinion.
Yeah. So, and you know, the thing is I've really started preaching to patients about men accessing services there, too.
Oh, and, yeah, that's a good point, because I wanted to make sure we made that point.
Yeah.
This is not gender specific. right? They serve everybody.
Men can get cancer screening. They can get birth control. Most Planned Parenthood clinics offer vasectomy on a sliding scale, so it becomes a very affordable procedure for men. They can get HPV shots, which prevent the human papillomavirus, which is the number one cause of cervical cancer. It places you at high risk for anal cancer, high risk for genital warts. So men can get prevention for those kinds of things.
Yep.
So it's just super important for people to think about what Planned Parenthood offers above and beyond the 3% of abortions that they do. They're also responsible for global health. They're very active in Africa and Latin America as well.
Yeah.
So, all in all,
we're saying this is a good thing.
Right. And you know, the other thing that I want to say to people who argue that they don't want their tax dollars or their federal money going for abortion. So only 1/3 of Planned Parenthood's budget comes from the federal government. And there are very stringent restrictions about whether or not any federal funds can be used for abortion. Basically, the language that I read was extremely rare and specific circumstances. I can't tell you exactly what those circumstances are, but my guess is probably it would be a child who would not survive outside of the womb, or it would be life-threatening for the mother.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that those are looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Well, and also would include, I'm sure, given Republican beliefs, would not allow for rape, incest.
Yeah, you know, that actually brings up another really important point. I'm glad that you brought that up, because one of the barriers that we put in terms of access to contraception and access to abortion for young people is there are a lot of states that have parental consent laws. I'm going to turn back because I actually do have those numbers. So 38 states out of our 50 states require parental involvement of some kind in a young woman's decision to have abortion. 25 states require one or both parents to give consent for the procedure. 13 require that one or both parents be notified. And in my opinion, this is a huge barrier for young women who are victims of incest or molestation.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, how many young women are going to seek services if the person who perpetrated that crime against them was their father or their brother?
And again, this is something that speaks to the built-in sexism of the system, because, again, you know, doesn't really work the other way.
Right.
But the other thing is, yeah, I mean, the truth is, right, I'm a minor, but you're my physician. My mom can't just come ask you, right?
So, how does that work? You know, I know what the law is in Alaska. I don't know what the law in California or elsewhere is. It's kind of complicated.
Yeah.
So I can provide reproductive health care to an adolescent without parental permission. And I am legally obligated not to disclose the conversation in those particular visits. However, you know, we all do our bills based on codes. And so I can put a code in the chart that basically will reflect what the visit was about. And
it's going to show up on the statement.
Right. Insurance has access to those codes, and the parents have access to those codes.
Well, because the parents are the ones who are going to pay the bills,
because
right?
Because the parents are the ones who are paying the bills, unless the kid has the wherewithal to come up with the money for a private visit or go somewhere like Planned Parenthood or public health and get sliding scale care. So I can guarantee them that I personally will not say what we talked about or what we did in a reproductive health visit, but I can't guarantee that the insurance isn't going to disclose that information to the parent.
Yeah, and not even intentionally.
Right.
Know, it's just going to be on the statement.
And you know, the other thing is that I can't treat a sinus infection in a teenager without parental permission. So it puts me and other primary care providers in a really weird place. you know, it kind of creates a little bit of an adversarial relationship with parents at times, which I don't like, but I'm also a big believer in prevention. So if I have to be that adversary, I'm going to be.
Yeah. And this is the thing where it's, again, this is some of the built-in weirdness of our system, right? You're 16, you can drive a car. 18, you can vote, sign a contract.
Right.
Have an abortion without your parents' permission.
Go into the military.
21, you can finally drink. Right? You know, it's just one of those, again, you know, it's just sometimes the system is so weird.
It is. It's completely bizarre. So. And, you know, I mean, I had a 12-year-old seeking contraception from me a few years ago, 12. And I was like, you know, I've got to be honest with you. There is part of me that's completely horrified. There's part of me that can't believe I'm having this conversation with someone who is 12. There's another part of me that says the cow is already out of the barn and I'm going to do everything I can to prevent this patient from having an unexpected pregnancy or an infection.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's super complicated. And we do not make it easier by not being honest with people about sexuality.
So much of this always comes back around to education, right? You want to reduce abortions, education. You want to reduce, you know, poverty, education. You know, and it all ties together.
It does.
And yet, education is this continual fight in this country that we don't fund it nearly enough.
So I think talking about Planned Parenthood leads us right into Act Three, which is revisiting the war on women. And I think the first place that we need to go is the shooting in Colorado Springs.
That motherfucker's crazy.
He
is.
Of
course, by my definition, anybody who picks up a gun, walks into any public place is crazy. But then, you know, this guy made a court appearance where the crazy, you know, got even clearer.
Right. And there was a lot of speculation at first about, oh, well, you know, maybe he didn't have anti-abortion motives. Maybe it wasn't even Planned Parenthood he was trying to shoot up. But he made it pretty clear
that yeah. He did what he did.
He called himself a warrior for babies.
Yeah, because Planned Parenthood is where they kill babies.
Well, and it also sounds like he was very much inspired by the rhetoric around those since-debunked videos that were released this summer.
Oh, right, yeah. I mean, the really horrific anti-abortion fraud that was perpetrated on the country.
That has been talked about again and again and again in the GOP debates, primarily by Carly Fiorina.
She anti-abortion?
Oh, she's horrible.
Yeah, I haven't paid attention to her because her chance of winning is zero, but...
Right, she had like 14 people show up at a town hall yesterday. I secretly cheered.
I guess that would be the end of her campaign.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Last one out, turn out the lights. And another one.
But, you know, I think the other thing that people need to stop and think about is that this guy had a significant history. He had a history of violence against women. At one point, yep. There were rape charges pending against him. He has admitted to doing things like gluing the locks shut on Planned Parenthood clinics before to prevent access to services. He killed 3 people. He wounded 4 civilians, and he wounded 5 police officers.
Right, and he would have kept going.
And he would have kept going. Yeah, exactly. And I just want to talk about the people that he killed. So he killed a 29-year-old Iraq war vet named Kiari Stewart, who leaves behind 2 daughters. He killed a 36-year-old woman named Jennifer Markowski, who was accompanying a friend to the clinic. She wasn't even getting services. And he killed a police officer who actually was super active in his church and was not pro-abortion services, but intervened to save lives anyway.
Yeah, just insanity.
And we live in a country where, because of the rhetoric around this topic, women cannot safely go to a clinic and get services. Their friends can't safely escort them to clinics to get services. We live in a country where doctors are killed for providing those services.
Exactly. And that defies all understanding, right?
Yeah.
By the way, the concept of I'm going to prevent murder by committing murder
right.
makes you a murderer.
Right.
So you don't get a walk because, oh, I was preventing a murder. It's not the way this works, people.
Right. Exactly. You know,
and it's an extreme form of religion that leads you to this, right, where you are basically a jihadist. You know?
I agree. So, I mean, I think that if we're going to apply the word terrorist liberally, we need to apply it to people like this shooter as well. And I'm not going to dignify him by speaking his name.
No, absolutely. Don't need to.
You know, but the concept, the conversation that's come up again and again and again about domestic terrorists and about white, male, disaffected right-wingers being shooters, you know, people need to take some responsibility for that, and people need to take some responsibility for their rhetoric.
Exactly. You know, you can't go around telling people that, you know, this is evil and everything and then expect people not to, you know, do what they do.
So I want to talk a little bit about some politics that have happened recently, and then I want to talk about Operation Rescue. Do you remember them?
Oh, yeah. They're still around?
They're still around, and I remember them from my teen years, and they are still around, they are still active, and they are still making problems. So so this was shortly after the shooting in Colorado Springs. This was on Thursday, December 3rd. The Senate actually voted on a budget bill that repealed the Affordable Care Act and defunded Planned Parenthood. It is expected to pass in the House, and it is expected to go to veto by the president. So what I'm saying is, right on the heels of this horrific shooting, our Congress then voted to defund the services that were made available by the target of the shooting.
Right, which, again, it's just Republican nonsense.
Right. The votes were primarily along party lines. It was 52-47.
And it's strictly red meat for the masses nonsense. Yep. Right? So that the conservatives think that they can bang the liberals with it, but you can't. You know.
I have to give some props.
Of course we voted against it. Of course we're not supporting you in this.
Well, you know? And I have to give some props to three Republicans. So Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, never thought I would say that out loud, props to Lisa.
Wow.
Susan Collins of Maine and Mark Kirk of Illinois, they actually introduced an amendment to this bill, to this budget bill, that would strip the defunding language. So that would actually, unfortunately, still proceed with their misguided attempt to repeal the Affordable Care Act, but it stripped the defunding for Planned Parenthood from the bill. And that amendment was defeated.
Yeah.
So there were three Republicans who actually voted on the side of women, or who actually advocated on the side of women, and they were defeated by the majority of their party.
So I would like to put this out there, and I would welcome somebody on the right, you know, letting me know, preferably in polite terms, because I'm going to try to couch this politely. But it does appear to me that you are opposed to educating our people, providing medical care to our people, including our vets, first responders to 9/11.
Yep.
So is it that you really want a dumb and pregnant society? You know, is that the goal here? Uneducated, unable to make rational decisions, unable to get access to health care, Planned Parenthood? I mean, is that really the goal of the right?
Well,
if it is your goal, that's fine. You get to have that goal. We get to oppose you. But could you please explain to me why the fuck that's what you're trying to do?
and so, you know, this we talk a lot about narrative, and this fits into the narrative of keep them sick, keep them poor, keep them uneducated, and you will keep them under your thumb.
Yeah, and maybe that's all it comes down to, is that this is how you ensure that you get to keep going back to Washington or the state house or whatever, right, is by having a dumb, uninformed, pregnant electorate.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you know, because, yeah, I mean, I guess the problem is if we ever get a hold of your constituents and stuff, we might actually get them to think about the fact that you're not in their best interest.
I just don't know how we explain that to people. Michael Moore asked that question in, I want to say it was Fahrenheit 9/11. It might have been Bowling for Columbine. How do we convince people not to vote against their self-interest?
Well, yeah, first and foremost, you have to tackle the concept that we're not all going to be rich.
Right.
You know, and I don't know how we get past that, but I guess that's our first hurdle. So we're going to put it out there, guys. You're not all going to get rich. None of us, you know, most of us aren't.
Most of us are not. Most of us are going to live a pretty average life and do the best we can to make a difference somewhere.
Absolutely.
If we're not exhausted, uneducated, and pregnant.
Right. And this is the thing, right, is that there's no better thing in the planet, right? Education, higher education, a little bit of travel, exposure to ideas that scare the shit out of you, different cultures that scare the shit out of you. Basically, you know, realizing that things that scare the shit out of you really actually don't need to scare the shit out of you. Because we're all fucking human beings, man. Quit trying to keep everybody down.
Yeah.
You know, and to the left who sometimes forgets what we're talking about and stumbles or whatever, need to remind people that abortion is still an issue. It shouldn't be an issue. It should not still be an issue this long after the fact of Roe v. Wade. But it's still an issue. And because it's still an issue, we still got to fight every single day to protect the rights of women. You know, and which is ultimately, though, if you think that it stops with women, you're just naive, right?
Right. By protecting the rights of women, you also protect the rights of their partners and their children.
Humans, yes.
Yeah,
protecting
humans.
Each other. You know, nobody's saying that you have to be a feminist like the last generation of feminists were. You know, that's fine. But just remember what they were fighting for, you know, and don't just give that up.
They fought hard for us, you know, they did. So on that note, yes, Operation Rescue is still around. For people who don't know, Operation Rescue is a vehemently anti-abortion, actually a violently anti-abortion group. I remember that they had a big stake in Domino's Pizza. And to this day, that's one of the reasons that I won't order Domino's Pizza. I don't know
if that wasn't it. It was the other way around.
Oh, what it was, Domino's donated to them.
The owner of Domino's Pizza gave freely and heavily to Operation Rescue. So I don't believe that that's still the case.
I was going to say, forgive me if I'm slandering Domino's now, but I can really I totally remember that from being a teenager.
But the other reason not to order from Domino's is it's really kind of like the worst pizza ever made.
So
there's that.
So Operation Rescue, the person who is currently in charge of Operation Rescue is a guy named Troy Newman. He actually endorsed Ted Cruz, who, by the way, just took the lead in Iowa for the GOP.
Yay! Go, Ted!
I don't know. So Troy Newman advocates capital punishment for abortion providers. For people who don't understand what that means killing people who provide safe and legal abortions.
Right, which is, again, the whole thing of, you don't get to commit murder just because you think they are. It's right. Not the way it works.
He also says that natural disasters, like the drought that you guys are currently going through in California, is because of the abortion rights that have been given in this country.
Absolutely. Just the same reason that Katrina hit New Orleans was because of the homosexuality in this country, right. And, you know, whatever nonsense.
And 9/11 happened because of feminists and pagans. Thank you, Pat Robertson.
I'm not sure I actually got that one.
Yeah, Pat Robertson said that.
Of course he did.
I also want to let people know that Operation Rescue employs people who are criminal, not just people who advocate murder, but people who actually do horrible things. So their senior policy advisor, a woman named Cheryl Sullinger, actually spent time in jail in the 1980s for conspiracy to bomb a clinic.
Yeah, but it would make sense, though, right? I mean, who else are you going to... You have to find somebody that whack to work on your shit. But this is the thing I would say to you guys, though, man. Look around at who you're surrounding yourselves with.
Right.
You know, But I'll cross that line, right? Apparently, the Christian God is actually, you know, fucking Rambo.
Well, you know, I just want to point out that these extreme beliefs, so again, someone who is advocating for death to any provider who provides a safe and legal abortion, which is currently the law of the land.
And is going to continue to be the law of the land.
From your lips to God's ears, the real God. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for that. No, seriously, though. So Ted Cruz is endorsed by people who endorse violence against clinic workers and against abortion providers. And Operation Rescue actually keeps a hit list of providers who offer abortion services, including clinic and home addresses for those providers. And they say that they're just doing it so they can pick it, but unfortunately it also creates easy targets.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's why
can we all be honest that what you're really hoping for is that one of your whack jobs, like in Colorado, will go off and kill somebody at their home, and then you'll get to say, well, but we had nothing to do with it. We weren't responsible in any way. You know, he was alone crazy, and by the way, shouldn't have anything to do with guns anyway.
Well, you know, and I mean, we just a handful of names. David Gunn, abortion provider killed by a right-wing extremist. George Tiller, abortion provider killed by a right-wing extremist. Bernard Slepian, I hope I'm getting his name right, gunned down in his home by a right-wing extremist.
Also known as you know, homegrown terrorists.
Right. Also known as people who get their information from groups like Operation Rescue so they can go and kill physicians in their homes. You know what? I know people here in the state of Alaska who are abortion providers. My favorite OBGYN offers abortion services. I would lose my shit if something happened to that doctor.
Right.
But I would wager, I did not look, but I would wager that that provider's name and information is on Operation Rescue's website.
Yep. And unfortunately, it only takes one insane motherfucker with a gun.
Right.
As we proved in Colorado a few weeks ago.
As we proved in San Bernardino a few weeks ago.
Yep.
So I don't know if you have anything else to say. I did want to wrap things up from my perspective with a letter written by a woman who is actually a minister, written to the Ohio legislature about abortion.
Okay.
Do you feel like that's an okay place to stop it?
I do.
Okay, so this woman is Reverend Rita Root. She lives in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. And her letter says, the Ohio House is scheduled to debate a bill that would ban abortions once the gestational age reaches 20 weeks. Supporters speak with great compassion for the life of the fetus, though rarely with any compassion for the woman who must make a difficult choice informed by her own life situation or by the advice of her physician. I do not believe their compassion is disingenuous. I do believe it's incomplete. Our focus should be to create a world where all children have access to medical care, adequate housing, food, and educational opportunities to lead full and dignified lives. No woman should ever have to justify why she chooses an abortion, a medical procedure to which safe and legal access is her right. This ban is an affront to the moral capacity of women to make choices based on the information only they and their doctor possess. The denial of safe and legal abortions, family planning services, and medical care to women who deserve both, as well as criminal implications for doctors and clinics who provide these services, is not who we are as a nation, and it should not be encoded into our state legal system. And I would just add, it should not be encoded into our federal legal system.
Or anybody's legal system.
Yeah. So that was pretty heavy. Do you have any updates that you want to hit on before we go on to something a little lighter?
No, not really.
I think we're, you know, obviously San Bernardino is weighing heavily on people's minds. And I think that we're probably going to talk about that at a future date.
Yep.
Do you have an oh, by the way?
I have two of them.
Awesome. Go for it.
First and foremost, the K-pop group Oh My Girl. All right. Oh My Girl, the 8-member South Korean K-pop group, was turned away from LAX this weekend. And so this is funny. This is only funny because they are claiming that they were denied access because we thought they were sex workers, and we held them for 15 hours before they could go home. Our side of the story is that, no, we were fully aware of the fact that they were performers trying to enter the country without the proper visa, and that the next flight to Korea was 15 hours later.
Oh, you mean that whole vetting thing actually worked?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just thought it was hilarious. I just really did. The other thing, this is, okay, so this one is just, again, the everybody can make up their mind. Kid, 7th grader, Boy Scout, active member of his church, volunteers at State Park, Rosenberg, Texas, huge Star Wars fan, and wore a Star Wars t-shirt with a stormtrooper holding a blaster rifle, and was told that that was inappropriate and forced to cover it up.
Okay, that's stupid.
Yeah, and I just want to say, that's Texas country, man, so I'm...
And I would just like to say that those of us who are advocating for sane and rational regulation of firearms don't buy into stupid shit like that.
That is just stupid shit. It's stupid shit.
And I know that's going to take
I will say this though, right? That I don't have to make the decision that is then going to be questioned
right.
by everybody if someday somebody shows up with a gun at my school.
Well, you know, I gotta say, if a kid came into school with a picture of Ted Nugent holding an assault rifle, I would tell them to cover that up. That's inappropriate. A stormtrooper? I don't fucking think so.
Yeah. You know.
But to each his own, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, this is just, you know, the weirdness of...
The weirdness of this country.
Yeah.
So my, oh, by the way, is totally frivolous, but frivolous in a good way. So there's a lot of stuff coming out about adult coloring books. And there is some research coming out that suggests that actually sitting and coloring just mindless repetitive things actually is as helpful as meditation, or almost as helpful as meditation. So I just wanted to throw out a couple of books. I bought a book called Color Me Calm, a Zen coloring book, and I've been really enjoying it. And I also just want to say that my friend Brittany Kaufman has done two adult coloring books with Alaska themes. One is called Finding Alaska, and the other is called Finding Alaska Again, and they're available on Amazon. They're beautiful. They're so intricate, and they're... I just can't tell you how lovely they are. In fact, I was in a doctor's office where she works a couple of weeks ago, and he had some framed prints on the wall that were original prints for the book. Just lovely. So, adult coloring. If you are not checking it out, give yourself permission to do it, because it's good. It's fun. It's healthy.
Excellent. Excellent. All right.
Would you believe that I have a Neil Gaiman quote about choice?
I would believe.
So unless we have anything else to say, I do have that to take us out on.
Take us out.
Okay. Let me get it pulled up. So this is from Sandman, Volume 4, Season of the Mists. And Neil Gaiman says, in the voice of Sandman, I'm assuming, sometimes we can choose the paths we follow. Sometimes our choices are made for us. And sometimes we have no choice at all. And on that note, we're out.
All right. Have a good week.
Everybody take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Got a lot tied up inside. Got kind of boy that just won't fight. Baby, it's a grind. And this your bitter light. Nothing just won't do. The girl pleads, the woman needs a wedding ring.